sobering, stimulating, and hot. It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program.
I think recently I've been depressed. I don't sleep good. I think too much.
Look, you ever hear the saying, the unexamined life is not worth living?
Yeah. Maybe the examined one isn't either.
Oh, no, come on, don't talk like that. Has this got something to do with Kurt Cobain?
Sober, stimulating, and hot. It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Cedric Muhammad.
to The Watchman, Shedded Mahomet, on the Black Coffee Channel. Shedded Mahomet.
Hold on. Just for the Bronx real quick. That bitch is dope. This is KRS-One. July 30th, 2009. I just wanted to send some subliminal messages out there. I want to welcome you to the hottest show in the diaspora. If you detect raspiness in the voice, it is not your ears that deceive you. I just got back in the AM from the West Coast. 114 degree heat has seared brain cells of mine. You may pick that up. I was out west. Suddenly had to go out west. Someone very close to me passed away. And so I was had to attend a funeral. But I'm happy to be here. We were able to reschedule the show. And really looking forward to it. I have several mental massages today to perform. Those who are not familiar, a mental massage is, I guess it's the equivalent of an in-depth look at a topic, maybe from different perspectives. We chop it up. I add my two cents. We may look at it from the perspective of media, audio, video, and commentary. I want to review the stories at blackelectorate.com, www.blackelectorate.com, CedricMuhammad.com, my personal site if you want to get my views. I have some blogs on there, of course. And you can, of course, watch the show or comment on the show page. The show page at CedricMuhammad.com is where you can send in direct comments if you would like to. We have an entire nation of commentators out there, the best that I've ever seen in terms of wit, viciousness, insight, and spiritual inspiration. Have no fear, I did catch up on my Tiny and Toya viewing. So I will have a review of Tiny and Toya, my new favorite show, followed closely by the T.O. show. If you saw the T.O. show or the Tiny and Toya show, be ready. Two things from each that I want to point out. I'm feeling this T.O. show. Fall back on the comments. Pump the brakes on any comments pertaining to the Philadelphia Phillies, who for some reason apparently think they have got it like that. Choosing to not pursue Roy Halladay after all. Picking up a replacement. A counterfeit replacement for Roy Halladay. Decent pitcher nonetheless. Lee, I don't really want to talk about him. If you're a baseball fan, you want to. If you think that this is the answer, this guy, to the Philadelphia Phillies' problems, let me know. Rest in peace, Jim Johnson, defensive coordinator, Philadelphia Eagles. Woo. Rest in peace. The godfather of the exotic blitz, Jim Johnson, defensive coordinator of my Philadelphia Eagles, passed away. I want to note him. A lot to talk about. I've got a dilemma in my residence. Apparently someone is smoking the herb. I will read the official memorandum that I received from the facility management. I need your advice. I have a dilemma I want you to help me with. What to do when your neighbors are smoking weed and management knows about it. That's the gangster part. Want to get to 7-Eleven today. They're highly successful or increasingly profitable business model. A lesson for those of you who are depressed right now. Note the Kurt Cobain intro. There are many, many people out here enduring much with the recession. Their approach is not to go get a government grant or bailout money. Their approach is to go make it happen. 7-Eleven, the convenience store chain, is making it happen right now. They're worthy of a look. I want to review the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's recent speech on the crucifixion of Michael Jackson. If you heard that in its entirety, some of you actually were present. I've been getting emails. Many of you were actually on the spot. Sound like you were trying to audition to be live reporters. Minister Farrakhan spoke on Michael Jackson in a very unique way. We'll review that, play some of that audio. What to do when your friends desert you? The Apostle Paul has some tips for us. We'll look at those. What to do when your friends desert you? I'm looking for the God particle today. We'll resume our discussion about the origin of God in the universe. And my brother Nimba. We are going to talk about hot African music from the Ivory Coast. I have it. And we'll pump it momentarily. Okay, let me get into my rant, which I hope you will find extremely relevant and applicable to your own personal situation. You know, each of us deal with this reality on some level. And I'm here to just encourage you to be yourself. And that should be understood on many levels. That can be understood in cultural terms, spiritual terms, very personal and personality-oriented terms. A lot of people think when you tell somebody be yourself or quote-unquote do you, do people still use that corny phrase, do you? Are people still using that? If you're using the phrase do you, let me know so I won't call it corny. But last time I checked, the people who were flipping and bouncing that term, as Ghostface Killah would say. Check the Purple Tape album, Raekwon. Only built for Cuban links. Go check out that album and you'll hear Ghostface give you instructions on how to properly flip and bounce lingo. If you're still flipping and bouncing the term, do you, let me know. But when you talk about being yourself with most people and get into do you type of mentality when that terminology is referring to, it's somehow the idea that being different for the sake of being different makes you right. That's not what I'm driving at. When I say be yourself, I'm not saying be different for the sake of being different. I don't find that to be an attribute. Diversity just for the sake of diversity never done anything for me. And I think it's a sign of immaturity. What I'm referring to is getting the knowledge of who you are, understanding who you are, your unique attributes, your personality traits. Undergoing some form of teaching, learning, and training to bring out or cultivate whatever is within you. That's the real meaning of the word education. It comes from a Latin word, educo. Yes, applaud. Standing ovate me. Educo. Look up the word educate, the root of it, educo, right? To draw out, I believe. I learned that. From the study guides, Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. That's also in Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, educo. So then after you gain some knowledge of who you are, some form of understanding, the next step is to undergo some form of deeper education and cultivation, teaching and training, and then recognizing through trial and error and experience and the lessons of others what does and does not work for you. That's what I mean by be yourself, okay? Now, this is a big issue with me because apparently there's some folks who don't understand what we're doing with this show or why we're doing it. And it grows from an unwillingness to accept or acknowledge my multi-pronged or multifaceted personality. So to make it relevant to you, you have people in your life that have met you at various stages, and they continue to see you only from the perspective or the experience that they had with you. So if a person knew you in high school, they tend to keep you in that form of mentality. If they met you at the job, they see you through the lens of work. If they met you through some form of cultural undertaking, or if you met someone in maybe in a religious community, this is a common reality or dynamic. People unwilling to allow you to grow or unwilling to acknowledge your evolution. Now, having said that, and having laid that base by what I mean by be yourself and applying it to this program, there are some people, I believe, that when they see a black person or a black male, they believe that somehow you have a responsibility not just to speak on black issues, but to speak on them in a way that is commonplace or mainstream. I totally reject that. Never done it. If I did, wasn't for very long. That's not really, in my view, what my calling is. That's not necessarily, in my opinion, what the next generation needs to focus on. It's a very superficial, ideological, or rhetorical kind of expression in terms of problems. I'm into, as you know, information, education, and community building and community action. Information, education, applied action, and community development. That's what I'm into. So sometimes that may make me to appear to be an intellectual. Other times it may make me to appear to be an institution builder. For some folks, it may have me positioned as a rhetorician. It's immaterial to me, because I know that you have to hit all of those elements eventually to accomplish the kind of goal that I'm looking to accomplish. So I thought this would be a good subject, because apparently some people think that if you are doing a show or a program and you are black and your subject matter tends to be black, you either have to be a card-carrying Democrat, no, you have to be a part of the black left, or you have to be part of a, you have to be some type of a puppeteer for the right, the conservative or Republican wing, all of which I find to be very insulting. Do you feel me? Can I get an amen on that? Insulting. On my show, we play not just hip-hop or R&B, we'll play jazz music, rock music, music from Africa, calypso. Why? Because I grew up on all of that. I'm not trying to do anything or be anything. That is who we are. So there's been a denial, I think, of the personality, or a fuller expression of a universal personality that undergirds the lives of every person, whether they're black, white, red, yellow. Well, there's not many options beyond that. So I reject that. I'll throw it off if a black person tries to play me a little too close on the quote-unquote ideological black power, you're down with us type of thing. I reject that. If a person that may find me operating in a universal, global environment wants to keep me there, no. I still want to bring it back to the hood, to the poor, to the homeless, to previously incarcerated persons. So this is the challenge now. How do you express your personality and still be viable in the marketplace, still be someone that people can work with, still be able to subordinate yourself to complement the attributes of others, even lifting them up perhaps at the expense of your own development or personality? Talk to me about if you are experiencing this. I find it to be quite fascinating. There's some people, I have some friends who have only seen me in a suit. Only see me in a suit. I have other friends who have never seen me in a suit. I have some friends that know me through my work in the music business. Other people know me through issues of concern on Africa. Some people know me through some political activism. People know me through my life as a Muslim. And it always is a tense moment, kind of hilarious to me. And I was speaking to an actress from Africa about this. How you can throw a person off just by showing more of your personality. Because the human being has a need to categorize and classify information according to, in a very efficient fashion. So if you study marketing, I put this in my book, coming out soon, by the way, very soon. Most people in the world of advertising, in the business world, they know that the human being really cannot hold more than 7 different items of a particular category, product line, in their head. So they know when you go to the grocery store that you're really probably not going to have more than 3 options in your mind when you go to buy a particular product, like toilet paper or a beverage or any good or service. So capitalizing on the human need and the human mind's process of organizing information and making decisions efficiently, people who influence your consuming decisions will try to play to that narrow list or that narrow worldview. Same thing happens in life. People don't really want to entertain your full personality because it may be inefficient for them. They only want to deal with maybe 1 or 2 aspects of who you are. Can the church say amen? I know you all are dealing with this. Every single person out here experiences this. So I have certain colleagues, friends, associates who only want me to talk about political strategy. I have others that only want me to talk about what's going on in the streets. I have some that want me to just build on high finance or progressive economic issues. I do it all. But I don't do it all because somebody has a leaning or a disposition toward me based upon a preference of one or two areas of my personality. So I say, be yourself. Do not conform to stereotypes and external limitations. Having said that, when you're in business, you always have to respect the feedback that you're getting from someone that you want to buy your product or service. If you're in a religion, you are evangelizing or proselytizing the faith, you can't really just be concerned with what you like. I have a chapter on etiquette and networking in my forthcoming book on entrepreneurship, which emphasizes the reality that you want to be effective. You want to be useful. You want to be valuable. You want to be attractive and magnetic. You can't be that just simply by only being concerned with what you like, with what you're good at, and expressing the full range of your personality. You have to be able to speak the language of the people in order to be successful in the right term or time period. And you have to be able to emphasize whatever aspect it is of your personality, or if it's a product or a service or a dimension. You have to know how to dimensionalize at the right time and in the right way in order to engage somebody. Somebody is not going to engage with you based upon 20 elements of who you are or 15 attributes or characteristics of whatever it is you may be selling. So you have to balance being yourself with being effective in doing trade and commerce and doing business with others, presenting yourself, offering yourself even. Offering a good or a service, offering a skill set in a job. People are not hiring you at your job based upon 18 characteristics. Most likely it's one or two. And this is because of the division of labor that's really an element. It's a natural element of the science of business and the economic process, the division of labor and specialization. So if you look at what's happening right now in economies around the world, I could take African economies, for instance. You take a look at those. There's a greater need for specialization and the division of labor beyond just digging things out of the ground like commodities, oil, gold. People in Africa, and I would say people in poor communities all over the world, are tired of not being able to express themselves and offer their talent, skills, and interests in a marketplace in exchange with other talent, goods, and services. So that model is ending, where you can just get rich off of what comes off of the earth, selling it to more wealthy countries around the world. Well, it's the same in life. If you're going to grow in life in a changing economic, political, and cultural environment, you can't just rely on your strength. What that one particular strength is coming, it's becoming obsolete. Many of the professionals in the financial community, those with MBAs right now, are dealing with this. Financial services is going to become a fraction of what it used to be. So what are those people going to do to transition out of careers that, or jobs that no longer are awaiting them in the field of financial specialization, financial services? People with MBAs now finding no market. They do not have marketable skills in many cases. Other professions, there's about 3 million jobs or professions that are offshoreable, meaning that they can go or be sent abroad and done more cheaply in places like India and Mexico, etc. So being competitive, being useful, staying relevant, being marketable requires you to diminish or downplay, even hide your power on its fullest scale. So you'll find that a lot of creative people, a lot of free spirit, spontaneous individuals, even spiritual, have a hard time and abstract concept, intellectual oriented people have a hard time functioning in rigid environments, formal environments, structured environments, where they cannot really, quote unquote, express themselves. This is big, big, big subject in terms of entrepreneurship, which to me is the perfect arena to balance creative and critical thinking, entrepreneurship. So if you have any thoughts on that, let me know. Be yourself. Stop conforming to stereotypes and the external limitations of others, unless it's good for business and it allows you to do future business. Now, people want that. I say it like this. People may want, I call it whacktivist radio, but I'll be more respectful. People that want quote unquote black activist radio, that has to be done in the context of business. This is the dilemma that the quote unquote minority broadcasting companies are having. Many of them relied upon advertising from Fortune 500 companies, many of which were car companies, automobile companies that are now bankrupt or out of business, as we all know, General Motors, etc. Their business model and the business model of much of black talk radio revolves around having sponsorship dollars pour in from corporate America. Their business model is also based upon the allotment or the securing of license guarantees or certain amount of business, some say quotas, others say just a fair share of contracting opportunities that would not be available otherwise because of the discriminatory practices that exist in the marketplace. So what you're finding now are a lot of the quote-unquote minority or black businesses of all sizes are now playing up the argument that we are going to go out of business unless we get a bailout or some type of preferential treatment or consideration for past grievances. To me, they're right. They're justified in making that call. I think any business or minority contractor who can make that argument that they've been denied opportunities because of historical discrimination, I think they're justified. And whatever they get, they can make an argument that I would accept that it's deserved. But to me, that's not business. That's something different. Don't call that just business. No. Business is when you are satisfying a basic need or want or some type of desire, fulfilling a need based upon that merit, and you engage in trade in order to obtain compensation or another good or service in exchange for what you're satisfying. That's business. All of this other stuff that goes on in the name of people, whether it's black or minority or Latino, it's not business. It may be political power, it may be chess playing, checker playing, economic maneuvering, and it is necessary, it's warranted, but don't call it business. I want to compete. We're all competing in the same universe, okay? If you've been part of a discriminated community, what you should be doing is doing business with members of your discriminated community, as well as making the political argument for compensation for historical grievances. Black talk radio can't survive because it doesn't do business with black people. I mean, I'm going to be blunt today, because I don't choose to operate in an arena where there is a charade going on where we can easily, Jewish, Chinese, black, Polish, Irish, Italian, African, we can, West Indian, we can all eat off of the plate of our neighbor, our own vine and fig tree, our own community, if we so chose to do so. I'm building up to something I want to get into regarding China and their one child policy. But I think it's a healthy exercise to consider throwing off the notion that you're doing business because you somehow were able to make an appeal based upon an argument for justice, historical grievances, and things of that nature in the past. Two different things altogether. I'll put the camera on in a minute. Let me drink this coffee. I want to go a little somewhere different today. I want to challenge each of you. If you had to eat, if it was just a matter of self-preservation, and there was a majority population, whether it is the anywhere, you can just any minority majority population anywhere in the world, if there's a majority population that's keeping you from opportunities to do business with it, they don't want to buy from you. They probably want to sell to you, but they don't want to buy from you. What do you do? I mean, how long do you keep rubbing your kneecaps saying you won't buy my bread, my milk, and my clothes when you have a neighbor who can buy your bread, milk, and clothes in the interim or in the meantime while you do your political activism and make your appeals for justice? Stop calling it business. It's not business. You can do business any day that you want with your family members, your friends, members of your fraternal organization, your ethnic group, your professional society. Stop saying that the government, Democrat, Republican administration, has to cut you in on stimulus package money in order for you to be in business. Stop it. It's an insult. It's a profound insult to human beings of all races. And I find it to be condescending to a people in particular, or minority populations that have suffered and endured discriminatory eras and survived because of ingenuity, innovation, and the ability to practice group economics and kinship systems among their own to get through that difficult time. You've already done the hard work. You've already practiced the principles. So I have a chapter in my book that goes through West Indian culture, Chinese, Japanese. Whenever there's periods of discrimination or you're a minority alien population inside of a majority group, everybody does the same thing to survive. Except you know who. All right. I know many of you, you know, won't agree. That's fine with me. But go out and get it for yourself, man. And not, when I say yourself, I'm not just talking about your raggedy behind. No, I'm not talking about just our individual whack self. I'm talking about your family, your friends, your brothers and sisters in your religious community, your fraternal organization, your tribe, your ethnicity. Go get it. Stop begging somebody for crumbs that they don't want to give you when you have wheat kernels in your pocket. Yes, I am saying that over a melodic beat. Be yourself. Don't conform to stereotypes. Don't accept external limitations. Business is not whining and protesting. Business is not making appropriate historical arguments about injustice and reparations. That's not business. Stop it. Go get it. I've got about 4 hours sleep. It was in 114 degree heat with Brother Charles. We were out west. Brain cells getting fried. Tiny and Toya review, T.O. show coming up a little later. Review of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's speech on Michael Jackson. I'm going to talk about what happens when your friends desert you. Yes, we're still looking for the God particle. Somebody is smoking weed in my complex, and management knows about it. I'm going to read you this memo. Unbelievable. We don't even have to have nominations for Gangster of the Week. The Gangster of the Week is the management of where I live. I will prove it. I'm going to read this memo that we got, those of us who live here. You ain't never heard nothing like this in your life. And if you have, I have to hear from you. It's the hottest show in the diaspora, Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. So CedricMuhammad.com. Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program, July 30th, 2009. Special Thursday edition. I had to go out west for a funeral for a very wonderful, beloved person. It was a sudden decision and a last-minute planning. So thank you for being patient. I know some of you came in faithfully yesterday. I apologize. We sent word out through show prep. Sign up for the mailing list, either at CedricMuhammad.com or at Black Coffee Channel. so you'll know these things in advance. Also, our fan page at Facebook. I said it earlier, go get it. Go get your sister, your brother, your mother, your father, your fraternity, sorority sister, ethnic community member, religious fellowship partners. Go get it. Nothing wrong with getting government grant money. Nothing wrong with getting cut in, quota style. Nothing wrong with activating or through political activism, opening up opportunities. But if you can't get it based upon the merits of what you're doing and from among your own people, you're not in business. When I say your own people, I mean various kinship systems and group economic opportunities or forums. If you're not getting money from them, you're not in business fully. If you're relying, if 90% of your business is coming from government contracts, stop it. You need to balance that portfolio a little bit. The dependency stuff got to come to an end for all quote unquote poor, oppressed, discriminated, and minority populations. Entrepreneurship, group economics. Go get it. While many of us have been forced to or been funneled into radio programs that have to traffic in just whacktivism and current events, topical subjects that don't really empower you in dealing with economics, business, or entrepreneurship, there are people out there that are getting it. Dealing with the situation and building or expanding, evolving their business model. Let's take a look at perhaps one example of a company that is adjusting, facing reality, and finding a way to survive and thrive. This show will continue to focus on entrepreneurship because it is an act of self-preservation, which means you have to deal with your own nature. It's a science, which means you have to respect the laws that operate inside and outside of you. And it's an art because you have to do it in a competitive environment. So much that we can learn through entrepreneurship. If all you're doing is political activism, rallies, broaden it out. Keep doing that. But expand a little bit. Because when you have to face the bottom line or self-preservation, certain decisions you will make that you would not have to do otherwise. What's going on with 7-Eleven?
And we are in growth mode. In the U.S., we plan to open 200 to 225 stores. This year, we'll open 1,900 stores globally. And so in this down environment, we're seeing some opportunity, particularly with the slowed down commercial real estate market.
And when you say particularly the slowed down commercial real estate market, what do you mean? You mean that you can buy new locations cheaply?
Absolutely. The commercial real estate market, we're seeing 10, 20, sometimes 30% or more decreases in overall rents. And so we're able to work with our real estate partners and get into sites that in the past were cost prohibitive to us, and now we have opportunity to get into those. So we're taking advantage. It's really the silver lining to a tough economy.
And is this because people are driving as much as they were? I mean, how does this work? I mean, I understand you sell basics, but I could also see how people would go to the gas station and just buy gas and not buy all of the extra things that you sell in this economy. Sounds like my logic would be wrong.
Well, where we're really going, Aaron, is we're growing three different ways. One is organically, and we're looking for walk-up sites or strip centers to build stores there. The second way is through acquisition. Now, we also have a business conversion program, which is very interesting and doing real well, where we partner with independent operators, mom-and-pop stores, and convert them to the 7-Eleven brand, provide them our scale, our purchasing power, all our infrastructure, and they give us great access to new sites.
And what about where you're seeing the most growth? We mentioned Southern California. In the U.S., top three growth markets for you are?
Top three growth markets are Southern California, the New York metropolitan area, and New Jersey.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it, Justin DePinto. Thanks for taking the time.
One more time. Get your mind right. This is a go-get-it entrepreneurial grind hour right now going on. Leave the government set aside and the grant money application aside right now. Put it on the shelf. 12 to 5 p.m. Eastern time. Just give me 5 hours of not thinking about begging for crumbs. Go get it. What would you have to do if it was announced tomorrow there were no more government contracts or minority set-aside programs? What would you do? Now, please say you would not fall out and die. I know some would. Would you just keep protesting anyway? Would you keep rallying, picketing? Or would you do what a business has to do, which is face reality, make decisions, execute a strategy, develop plans, and go get it? Now, I'm sure 7-Eleven has political lobbying and they operate, you know, in the political terrain of the local communities where they have stores and in the states where they operate. Sure. I think you need to do that. I have a chapter in my book on policy and pursuing your self-enlightened interest in my book. It's going to hurt a lot of people's feelings because I think you are absolutely not pursuing a self-enlightened interest if you are only voting straight line one political party. I'm going to say that one more time. If you are in business and you are an entrepreneur and you are only voting straight line one political party, I don't care which one it is, but it most likely we know it will be Democrat, you are not acting in the best interest of your business. There is no way that on every issue, if you look at it from the prism of your entrepreneurial reality, or whatever your small business may be having to do, there's no way you could justify a straight vote from a single political party. It would be an act of insanity and suicide. I give a whole chapter to this in my forthcoming book. 7-Eleven, teach one more time.
And we are in growth mode. In the U.S., we plan to open...
I got chills when he said that. We are in growth mode. In the midst of a recession, in the midst of the greatest panic since the Depression, this man says 7-Eleven is in a growth mode.
And we are in growth mode. In the U.S., we plan to open 200 to 225 stores. This year, we'll open 1,900 stores globally. And so in this down environment, we're seeing some opportunity, particularly with the slowed down commercial real estate market.
And when you say particularly the slowed down commercial real estate market, what do you mean? You mean that you can buy new locations cheaply?
Absolutely. The commercial real estate market, we're seeing 10, 20, sometimes 30% or more decreases in overall rents. And so we're able to work with our real estate partners and get into sites that in the past were cost prohibitive to us, and now we have opportunity to get into those. So we're taking advantage. It's really the silver lining to a tough economy.
And is this because people are driving as much as they were? I mean, how does this work? I mean, I understand you sell basics, but I could also see how people would go to the gas station and just buy gas and not buy all of the extra things that you sell in this economy. Sounds like my logic would be wrong.
Well, where we're really going, Aaron, is we're growing three different ways. One is organically, and we're looking for walk-up sites or strip centers to build stores there. The second way is through acquisition. Now, we also have a business conversion program, which is very interesting and doing real well, where we partner with independent operators, mom-and-pop stores, and convert them to the 7-Eleven brand, provide them our scale, our purchasing power, all our infrastructure, and they give us great access to new sites.
And what about where you're seeing the most growth? We mentioned Southern California. In the U.S., top three growth markets for you are?
Top three growth markets are Southern California, the New York metropolitan area, and New Jersey.
And New Jersey. All right. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Joshua DePinto, thanks for taking the time.
Jersey. I mean, I didn't hear any hint in his voice of desperation. He said, we're in growth mode. This is really an era that requires growth. You really can't even plateau and maintain. You know, everybody, what's up? How you doing? I'm maintaining. You can't really maintain no more. You got to be in growth. Just really to stay where you were, growth mode, new things. I always talk about at cmcap.com with my clients the difference between emerging demand and current demand. You have certain people only focus on current demand. That's where the music industry went wrong. I want to talk a little bit later about the demise of the album and can iTunes bring back the album? I don't think it can be brought back until the root of why albums are not being bought at the same level they were before is properly addressed. I don't think people have really accepted why album sales plummeted. Russell Simmons and I had a debate about this about 6-7 years ago. I think I want to go over what Russell and I said and comment. But if you care only about the group of people that you already have the eye, ear, and support of, you're dying. You're not even going to die. You are actually dying. If you are not looking at the demographics of the next generation and you're only focusing on the current generation or those who were in the previous generation, you are actually dying. This is why I can't do the kind of show. What did KRS-One say? The style that you're used to? I really should play that. I think KRS-One had a song called The Style That You're Used To. I can't do the style that you're used to. I have to be myself. I have to go after emerging demand. I have to go after Africa, the Caribbean. I have to go after Europe and Asia. I have to go after the real community, not the community. I mean, people always say, well, we serve the black community or we serve ethnic communities. You serve the elite in that community. You don't serve the people. If you were serving the people, you would be promoting things like King Jay, Jorge Cornell's candidacy for Greensboro City Council. That's the community, a member of the Almighty Latin King and Queen Nation running for city council. Person who's done more to lift up the cause of peace among young people and who actively has young people supporting him. I've been with King Jay, very young people supporting him. That's somebody who's not afraid to work with the youth. But community leadership doesn't deal with 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 year olds. Well, you're not representing the community. Step out the way, let somebody else come in who can speak the language of the young people and who has credible relationships with them. King Jay, Jorge Cornell is an example of that. So it's a new day. There's an emerging product, an emerging mentality, an emerging leadership, and an emerging business model that will be or respond to the call of what time and circumstance demand. If you're hanging on, begging, milking your political connections and your ability to rally people to protest and quote-unquote mobilize, that's pure whacktivism. It's dying. You're dying. Now, all due respect to the Philadelphia Phillies, I've given them a hard time for not getting Roy Halladay. But I have to acknowledge the truth in their reason for not trading for possibly the second best pitcher in baseball. They did not want to give up the prospects that the Toronto Blue Jays wanted. Toronto wanted the top four, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Toronto wanted basically the top three or four prospects in all of the Philadelphia Phillies farm system. The farm system is where the younger, more inexperienced college graduate or minor league baseball players play. Toronto wanted basically Philadelphia's best, one of their better pitchers that's currently on the squad, and they wanted all of these young prospects. Philadelphia said, no, we're not going to mortgage the future just to get to the World Series with this excellent player. So they go and get probably the second or third best available pitcher and keep most of those prospects. We'll see if they made the right decision. My position is they need to win now. Give us some thought. Current and emerging demand. Do you care more about the people who are in front of you, who you already have the attention of, or do you care more about those who have yet to hear your message or buy your product or who have even yet to hear your voice or get acquainted with who you are? July 30th, 2009, Thursday. You know I'm used to saying Wednesday. Thursday. Let's go get it. I don't see what the holdup is. 7-Eleven, again, is in growth mode. Preach to me one more time, 7-Eleven GM.
And we are in growth mode. In the U.S., we plan to open 200 to 225 stores this year. We'll open 1,900 stores globally. And so in this down environment, we're seeing some opportunity, particularly with the slowed down commercial real estate market.
And when you say particularly the slowdown commercial real estate market, what do you mean? I mean that you can buy new locations cheaply?
Absolutely. The commercial real estate market, we're seeing 10, 20, sometimes 30% or more decreases in overall rents. And so we're able to work with our real estate partners and get into sites that in the past were cost prohibitive to us.
Hey, folks, Hard times are opportunities. Necessity is the mother of invention. Suffering gives birth to creativity. Chaos and adversity are actually fuel.
Cedric Muhammad.
Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program, July 30th, 2009, Thursday. We'll be back Wednesday, normal schedule next week. CedricMuhammad.com, BlackElectorate.com, BlackCoffeeChannel.com. Great subject. Go get it. We're making too many excuses, making President Obama's job harder than it is, and getting away with a masquerade as if we're really doing something. People calling themselves activists, what are they really activating? They're reacting, rather wackily, to a circumstance that they did not create. My whole thing with President Obama's statement on Skip Gates, that's not, I don't identify with I don't identify with Professor Gates' reality as it relates to this issue. I've had guns drawn on me, thrown in the car, taken down to the station, cuffed, searched illegally. You name it, I've had it. This is nothing new. People who want to act like this is a new issue and want to rally, you must be kidding me. This is going on every day right now. I'm not going to react to an incident that happens with Professor Gates and President Obama makes a statement, uses a very strong word, and now everybody is up in arms. So if you really want to stop police brutality, it won't be by reacting to this. It'll be, as I've written before at BlackElectorate.com, through the privatization of the police department by the community. Not by corporate America, not by Wackenhut, by the community. When Newark, New Jersey, or Camden, New Jersey, or Compton, California, or Chicago, Illinois, has anywhere from maybe 10 to 25% of its police budget going to organizations like the Black Church, NAACP, oh hell, Omega Psi Phi can even get some of that money, Nation of Islam, Nation of Gods and Earths, Concerned Black Men, any sister organizations, I just said that because I'd be called sexist, but really the men should be eager and anxious to take on this responsibility. Once you have a portion of the police budget going to people in the community directly so that they can patrol, form companies, security companies, etc., and get some of that money that they're giving to the local city government, then you'll see police brutality go down, crime go down, racial profiling over. Get these damn cops out of the neighborhood that don't live there, patrolling communities that they don't live in. Get them the hell out. Some of you all that are for vouchers, being a parrot for people on the right, why aren't you for vouchers when it comes to people in the Black or Latino community patrolling their neighborhoods? How about giving that money to community security firms? That's why I laugh at some of you that get caught up in political ideology. People on the left, why don't you get some, why won't the NAACP protest so that contracts will come to Black security firms made up of church members, former quote-unquote gang members? Then you'll stop police brutality. And you know what? I may read the article I wrote. I wrote this about 7 or 8 years ago. Give the money, a portion of the police department, to people that live in those communities to not carry weapons, but just learn self-defense. Give them some training on sensitivity. Give them the Dale Carnegie How to Win Friends, Influence People's course. Give them some self-defense training. Give them some cultural sensitivity stuff. And empower them to do everything but put cuffs on somebody. No weapons, no forcible arrests with handcuffs. I guarantee you crime will go down dramatically. Why? You can't do that, though, because if you're thinking like a Democrat only, you're going to beg the police to just be better and nicer and stop beating your head in. Beat my head in less softly, more gently. That's the Democrat black left approach. The black right approach is they deserved it anyway, knuckleheads. So this is what we have to choose from when you don't think in terms of group economics, entrepreneurship, and business. If you think in terms of those three areas, then you know the answer is give me some of that money that you're wasting at the local city police department budget. There's some able-bodied individuals who are unemployed, who know the people in the neighborhood. Give them an opportunity to police their own, protect their own property. When is that going to be on the political agenda? You feel me? Camera is on me if you want to look now. Or you may say, Cedric, you're talking real strong today. Yeah, I had 114 degree heat working on my brain cells for 3 days. I was on the West. Khakis is creased. Are they tight? I didn't see any skinny khakis on the West Coast. You all let me know. Are people wearing skinny khakis on the West? Yeah, this is going to be one of them shows today. No nonsense.
Cedric Muhammad.
You don't know what hard times are, Daddy. Hard times are when the textile workers around this country are out of work and got 4 or 5 kids and can't pay their wages, can't buy their food. Hard times are when the auto workers are out of work and they tell them go home. And hard times are when a man has worked at a job 30 years. They give him a watch, kick him in the butt, and say, hey, a computer took your place, Daddy. That's hard time. That's hard time.
Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad.
Hard times are coming to your town. So stay alert, don't let them get you down. They tell you times are tough, you hear that times are hard. But when you work for the ink, you know you pull the right card. Hard times got my pocket all in the chain. I tell you what, oh, it don't have my brain. All day I have to work at my peak.
Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad. Cedric Muhammad.
Beating hard times, that is my theme. Hard times in life, hard times in death. I'm gonna keep on fighting till my very last breath. Hard times.
Cedric Muhammad.
You don't know what hard times are, Dennis. Hard times are when the textile workers around this country are out of work. They got four or five kids and can't pay the wages, can't buy the food. Hard times are when the auto workers are out of work and they tell them go home. And hard times are when a man has worked at a job 30 years, 30 years. They give him a watch, kick him in the butt and say, hey, a computer took your place, daddy. That's hard times. That's hard times.
Cedric Muhammad.